And good afternoon, everyone. Welcome back to Fire It Up, the show where we get into the mechanics of our political system here in America. My name is Steve. I'm your host each week, and we dive into what's going on in the political realm from the standpoint of how the system is working or not working for us, the American people. It's really great to be here, and I thank WJMS Radio for hosting our show each week. And let's dive into what's going on. So, couple of things I want to talk about in today's episode. Obviously, you know, we just completed in the past week, we had another Democratic debate ahead of the caucuses in Nevada. And I don't know if you watched the show, although 30 million Americans did, about twice the number that have watched the other debates that have already occurred. And I suspect it was because candidate Michael Bloomberg was on the stage for this one, and he had not been present for any of the others. And in fact, he's not on the ballot in Nevada, so we won't get to judge him by the number of people that vote for him. But, you know, it was just another in the series of what I'm just convinced are really just, you know, politics shows. It was almost a circus-like atmosphere with candidates shouting over one another and trying to get their points in, so that it was really difficult for any clear, coherent messages to be brought out. And I think that's part of the problem we have, and I want to talk about that in a little bit, with our, you know, election process, both the Democrat and the Republican side. After the Democratic debate, I spent a little bit of time going back and reviewing recordings of the Republican debate in 2016, and found a lot of the same problems where, you know, it's more about, can I get my point in? Can I get my point in? Can I squeeze a word in here edgewise? Can I get this sentence in? Can I make my point? Rather than having a cogent, coherent discussion of the issues where, you know, specific questions are asked and specifically answered. The candidates seem to, you know, get a question and then spend half of their allotted time answering a previous question or making an unrelated point. And, you know, the ultimate thing, the reason that we have these debates, after all, is for the American people to see and hear their candidates answer specific questions about the important issues and use that information to help them judge onto who to vote for. But if they are spending their time tearing each other down and accusing one or the other of some perceived, you know, misstep or misquote or forgotten, you know, piece of information, then we're not getting anything out of it. And, you know, after listening to that debate pretty much in its entirety, again, I wanted to hear, you know, how Michael Bloomberg performed. And, you know, I came away really with the same amount, if not more, questions than I had at the start of the debate. You know, and the mainstream media didn't do any favors by spending so much time talking about which candidate attacked which other candidate and who made the best point of, you know, pointing up a mistake of another candidate. And, you know, I just, as I turned off the TV at the end of the debate, I just sat there for a minute and kind of processed it in my head and really came to the conclusion that a better way needs to be constructed. There's got to be a better way for us to identify and learn from and learn about candidates for political office on either side of the political spectrum. As I said, I went back and looked at several of the Republican debates from 2016, and, you know, it was a lot of the same thing, a lot of finger pointing, a lot of name calling, a lot of really irrelevant dialogue that did not discuss what the political issues were of the time. You know, it really begs the question, is this the only way we know how to do this? And, you know, much like what I've said in prior episodes with, you know, candidates who have valid positions, who have been, you know, forced out of the political race for lack of funding, This is also a serious flaw in our process, and one that needs to be addressed in overhauling, you know, how we see and get information from our candidates for high national office, and you know what we need to do, what we need to get the political parties, the national committees, to engage in rebuilding how they present their candidates to the American people, so that we can decide who it is we want to finally elect to represent us. And another point to add, as I'm critiquing the Democratic debate of last week, the Democratic National Chairman Tom Perez opened up the debate with a wide-ranging kind of rambling speech that really, set a tone for how raucous that session was going to be. We really need to encourage and get our committees, our national committees, to take this more seriously, to make it less a media show and more an informative series. Another critique I had, and again, this was both sides, because I looked at, past debates in the Republican side in 2016, as well as some of the video from the current collection of Democratic debates. This process of having, 4 and 5 moderators asking questions from different perspectives, that too only serves to create this overkill of information that we the people are supposed to be able to process and parse to find the key elements that we want to hear. I'm old enough to remember debates going way back where, literally there were 2 moderators, and there was a list of questions that they asked based on current political issues and current political topics of the day, and the 2 moderators had a very controlled, very reasonable conversation with the candidates, and it really was more like what a debate is supposed to be. When you think about it, when you look at what a debate is, where you have 2 sides on either side of an argument, proposing their solutions and their responses to the argument point, and the winner is the one who best convinces the panel that their point is the most salient and the most correct. What we have is, as I said, a bunch of finger pointing, character assassinations, that really don't advance the political necessity that we need to have in order for us to make an informed decision when we go to vote. So, there's a lot of work that needs to be done in how our campaign process, how our debate processes, how our election processes work in order to improve how well our process reflects the will of the people. We have this comparison now between these caucuses. We have Iowa, which is first. We just concluded or finishing up, actually, as the time I record this, they're still counting some votes out there. And, then we have these, balloted elections where, the candidates are listed and you pick the ones you want, and the person that gets the most votes wins. The idea is that the majority of the voters should be the ones that are deciding the outcomes of elections. And of course that leads into the conversation going on about, the effectiveness and the necessity of the Electoral College, but that's conversation for another show. So, at the end of the day, when the debate was finished, much of the discussion that was had was not as much on the merits of the points raised at the debate. It was more about, primarily how well Bloomberg performed. As I said, he has not done any major interviews. He has not, had, any significant live media exposure, but he has spent nearly $500 million on televised and internet-based advertising as his way of getting the message out. And when you look at, the messages that are being put out there, and then contrast that with his responses to questions posed, around those issues, there was a huge gap. He really did not perform well, as many of the candidates that were up there did not perform at their best. It's clear that the focus of the candidates on being the one who can, quote, beat Donald Trump, close quote, really cuts short to the point that we need to know is, if elected president, what are you going to do about these major issues? What are you going to do about, global warming and climate change? What are you going to do about, employment? What are you going to do about education, both, school age education and college education and tuition? There is a whole lot of issues that did not get raised and did not get discussed. So I have, a fundamental set of problems with how this campaign process and how these debate processes are being handled. And I think we've moved away from what really should be happening. The bottom line is we need to be having a comprehensive conversation about the political issues in this country, the issues that affect the broad, category of Americans, not just the rich, and really dive into what needs to be done in order to fix the problems we have, in our country. And we need to be holding, our candidates and their political committees accountable and responsible to provide us the information we need to make an informed, intelligent, and correct decision about the leadership in our country. And until we can fix that, what we're going to continue to have are these game show-like debates where, candidates are so busy taking jabs at each other that they don't answer effectively the questions that are put to them, number one. And number two, they don't give us any indication as to what not only their policies are, but what their strategies are. So, free college tuition, it's a great soundbite, but how do you make that work? How does it boil down to what it will cost the American people? Healthcare for all, another great soundbite. It sounds good when you stand on a stage and talk about how you are the candidate, the proponent for having a healthcare system for everybody. What needs to follow that up is, and here's how I would do it. And then line out your points. What do you need in order to make this program work realistically, and be efficient and effective at what we need it to do? That is woefully missing from all of the political discussions on both sides of the aisle, because of, the fear of alienating some, favored group, whether it's lobbyists or, big money or donors or whatever, rather than having a discussion on what is best for our country. That's got to be the bottom line. That's got to be the objective. That's got to be the goal. And none of the candidates are meeting up to that goal in any, overwhelmingly effective way. Yes, we get pieces of it. Yes, we get dribs and drabs of what, this person's policy is on, higher education, or what to do about the crushing student debt that impacts, so many people in our country. We get pieces. We need an effective strategy. We need your details. We need, how do you propose to get this through Congress the way it exists right now, and Congress as it might exist post-election. So, you know, not having those discussions are really hamstringing the information that we the people need in order to make an informed decision. The other piece of, you know, the Democratic debate specifically, goes back to, you know, a similar thing. Yes, candidates make mistakes. Yes, they have gaffes. Yes, you disagree with their opinions. But to spend time, to spend as huge a chunk of that debate time frame as they did in purely, you know, character assassination really doesn't help us. You know, the debates need to be, in my opinion, Democratic and Republican debates for high office need to be somehow, you know, controlled and really moderated. You know, where candidates are trying to, you know, divert away from directly answering a question, the role of the moderator should be to bring them back to that question to get a specific answer. One of the things you'll notice in contrast is post the Democratic debate, one of the media outlets had town hall meetings with each of the candidates over a couple of nights with a live audience where questions were asked of the candidates by the people. Those I found to be much more substantive and much more informative and much more of an indication of where these candidates stand. You know, it was the host, it was the candidate, and it was a group of people in a studio audience who had questions that were presented, and the candidates answered those questions specifically. They didn't have to worry about the candidate on their left or the candidate on their right coming back and taking a dig at them or a criticism of them, which they then had to turn around and respond to, and then that person had to turn around and respond to it. You know, it was really, really engaging and informative. And our debates need to be more in that format. I think we get more out of those one-on-ones with the individual candidates than we did in the whole 3 hours of the debate. Again, it's my opinion, it's just, you know, the way I feel, and I think, and based on conversations I've had, that I'm not alone in that. Even though a huge number of people watched, the reason they watched was not about getting answers to the problems that face us. So, you know, to the candidates, save the finger pointing, save the jabs, you know, do that out on the stump speeches. You know, if you want to talk about somebody and so forth, so on, do it somewhere else. But when the objective is to get the American people answers to the questions we have of someone that, you know, we are going to elect for the highest office in our country, you know, it needs to be much more focused, much more intensive, and much more substantive. So, you know, that's just my take on, you know, what's transpired so far. By the way, in looking at the results, you know, and you can go to the mainstream media and your media sources to get a deeper breakdown. But, you know, from the early statistics, you know, Bernie Sanders clearly has won that debate, scoring, you know, more than twice the percentage of votes as the candidate who came in second, which happened to be Joe Biden. Mayor Pete Buttigieg came in third, and Elizabeth Warren came in fourth. So, you know, one other point to make as I give you those perspectives is the mainstream media needs to stop projecting, you know, Bernie Sanders or whoever wins, you know, an individual debate and perhaps moves to the top of the list as a, quote, presumptive front runner, close quote, in the process. You need over 1,900 delegates to win the nomination at the convention. So far, I think we have, maybe 200 that have been decided. We got a long way to go. We need to be focused on issues and, and qualifications and so forth before we start, declaring an ultimate victor at this early stage. So we'll leave it there for right now. We'll continue to follow this, obviously. Let's take our first break and have a little musical break. When we come back after the break, I want to have a discussion on an equally, if not more important, aspect of the 2020 election that I am not seeing get a lot of attention, and that is the down ballot races, beyond who's running for president. So we'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fire It Up. My name is Steve. I appreciate your being here on WJMSradio.com. We'll be right back after we take this break.
My name is Christian. I am the voice of shame, remembering things that I told me yesterday. My name is Christian. I am inside your frame. We saw the devils, had to make them go away. My name is what's your name. You might reject my claim, but I expect that you won't vary from the norm. My name is what's your name. Ours is a single aim, and we can double recognize and need a form. Take it to the streets, tell everybody you meet. Whatever you do, whenever you hear the war drum beating, put it in the air, spread it everywhere. Do whatever you do, whenever you know you got to be there. Some might you only take it as a symbol. Some might look closely, who does it resemble? My name is what's your name. If you recall the change, then you can dig that we've been put into a trance. My name is what to do. I am inside of you. I've been here ever since the day you learned to stand. My name is what your name. Born on the wings of strain. Ours is a justice that has long been overdue. My name is what to do. But we already knew. And now the clouds are winning. How come into view? Take it to the streets. Tell everybody you meet, do whatever you do whenever you hear the war drum beating. Put it in the air, spread it everywhere. Do whatever you do whenever you know you got to be there. Some might you only take it as a symbol. Some might look closely, who does it resemble? My name is what's your name. I am the voice of same, remembering things that I told me yesterday. My name is what's your name. I am inside your frame. We saw the devils, had to make them go away. Take it to the streets and tell everybody you meet. Do whatever you do whenever you hear the war drum beating. Put it in the air, spread it everywhere. Do whatever you do whenever you know you gotta be there. Some might you only take it as a symbol. Some might look closely, who does it resemble? Some might you only take it as a symbol. Some might look closely, who does it resemble? Some might you only take it as a symbol.
And welcome back to Fire It Up here on WJMSRadio.com. We were talking about the Democratic debate, which just concluded last week. We're going to move on and switch gears, and I want to talk about, as I was saying at the conclusion of the segment, an equally important component of the 2020 election is the down ballot races that are occurring. And these include our senators and congressmen at the federal level, as well as governors, you know, state legislators, state congressmen, and all the way down to your local people, mayors, city council, selectmen board, etc., etc. The national media has not, from what I can hear, given a whole lot of discussion to these down ballot races. They are not, you know, getting beyond the focus of the presidential elections. And I think, you know, we've got to be as informed and educated voters as we say here on the show. You've got to do your diligence. You got to dig deeper, dig wider. You got to find the information that gives you the facts that you need to make an informed and educated decision when you go into that voting booth. And that includes your state and local political offices that are up for re-election. For this segment, and I know I've talked about the local elections in prior segments, and you know they are critically important, but for this segment, I really want to focus on the United States Senate and the United States House of Representatives and kind of give you a sense of where we are with that and you know what our actions need to be in order to move and affect the change we want to see in our political system here in the country. Right now, in the Senate side, there are 35 seats that are up for election. 12 of those seats are currently democratically held. 23 of those seats are currently held by Republicans. In the Senate, the Republicans have a 53-47 majority over the Democrats, and that includes the two independent senators who caucus with the Democratic side. So what that means is for the Democrats to take over control of the Senate, they need a net gain of six or more Senate seats in the upcoming election. And if the Republicans are going to keep control of the Senate, they need to, you know, maintain the senators they have that are up for re-election. All of them need to get their seats back, which would essentially mean no change in the makeup of the Senate. Now, you know, as I've said, there's not a lot of conversation being held in the national media about these races, and there are a couple of them that, you know, if you are a Democratic supporter, should be a big focus of your efforts. Of course, you know, one of the things that Democrats need to do is to get, you know, some of the current Republican leadership out of office. And that would be senators such as Mitch McConnell in Kentucky and Lindsey Graham, Lamar Alexander, and others who have been, you know, outspoken supporters of the president, as we saw in the, you know, impeachment process that we concluded last month. Mitch McConnell played a key role in holding his Republican caucus together as one solid block, and you know, basically acquitting the president of charges, even though, as I've said in prior episodes, many Republicans felt that what the president did was wrong, but that it wasn't impeachable. Some of that had to be, you know, from leverage applied through the Republican Party and through Mitch McConnell. So obviously, if you are in favor of, you know, flipping the United States Senate to Democratic control, or at least to Democratic parity, one of the objectives has to be to get that leadership voted out of office in their state races. So, you know, that is not being discussed to any great extent in the national media that I can see. But in particular, if you are in Kentucky, you need to make sure that you are engaged in that process so that you are involved, either, you know, Republican or Democrat, in the actual process of you know, that election. And, you know, keep in mind that, you know, even if you are, you know, a Republican, it is important for you to maintain your, you know, your leadership status in terms of the number of people you have voting in the state and the number of people represented, you know, in the House of Representatives, because that goes to determine, you know, funding for projects and what happens in your state. We've talked in prior episodes about the effect of the census, which also occurs in the 2020 year. We'll touch on that in our call to action segment. But you know, in combination with that and redistricting and, you know, control of your local state legislators, that is how, you know, things are going to get done in this country. You know, the president, you know, beyond his ability to issue executive orders, cannot make law. It is not allowed under the Constitution. Laws are created by the legislative branch. The president, as the chief executive, signs laws into effect and makes them, you know, codified into part of our legal system. But per se, the president does not create law. Now, you know, obviously the president's agenda and things that are important to him play a big role in how laws get developed, what laws get passed, and so forth. But it is the legislative branch that actually enacts the bills into laws that the president can either sign or veto. So in the upcoming election, as I said, we have 12 Democratic senators and 23 Republican senators who are up for re-election. And if the Democrats hope to regain control of the Senate, they will need to gather at least six or more new Senate seats by defeating incumbent Republicans. You know, and, you know, obviously, if you're a Democratic supporter, you know, Mitch McConnell, Lindsey Graham, Lamar Alexander, and some others should be high on your radar list for efforts in order to unseat them and be part of that move to move control of the Senate over to the Democratic side. Because, you know, to be real, the odds are betting that the president will in fact be reelected. I don't know if that's going to happen, but, you know, a lot of the odds makers and the pundits out there are saying that it is fairly assured that the president will be reelected for a second term. And if, you know, we want to see changes happen and things that are important to the broad population of this country, then that's going to have to be done by having control of the legislative branch. So the marching orders for the Democrats are, you know, six or more seats in the Senate, and you know, a 36 seat switch or maintaining rather their control of the House and perhaps adding some more seats to that in order to secure control of the legislative branch. The other thing to keep in mind is for most laws and for most rules, you know, such as appointment and approval of judges, a simple majority is all that's required. For some elements, such as, you know, impeachment or other legal avenues, you need what is called a veto-proof or a supermajority, which is two-thirds of the Senate or more. So that would be 67 seats. Now, it is unlikely that the Democrats are going to pick up basically 22 seats in the Senate. It's not impossible, but it is unlikely. But a majority in the Senate is within the realm of possibility for the Democrats. And, you know, as voters, we need to be, you know, assessing, you know, what our opinion of the Senate is, and, you know, make the voting selections appropriate to our thinking, again, Republican or Democrat, you know, and make that happen. Because the other thing you have to keep in mind is, it's, you know, yes, it's an election game. Yes, it's which politician gets the most votes, but it is also a numbers game, a voter numbers game. The more engaged the broad population is in the election process, the more our elected officials are aware that we are in fact watching, and that we are holding them accountable, and that we are engaged in making sure that they are doing what we send them there to do. You know, we hear all the time in polls where, you know, 70% of the American people believe X, or, you know, 57% of the American people, some majority of the American people believe in a course of action, and yet we see our elected officials vote opposite that course of action simply because of the influence of outside entities and lobbies on their voting practices. And as long as that is, you know, sort of the modus operandi of how things get done, the broad swath of people, the majority of people in our country are actually being made voiceless. They are not listening to what we want done. They are doing what, you know, their benefactors say they must do. And that's not democracy. Democracy is governance of the people by the people, not governance of the people by special interests. That's not the way it's supposed to work. So, you know, if the Republicans want to try and take control of the House and regain their control of all three branches of government again, they're going to need to get at least 36 congressional seats swapped over from the Democrats in order to make that happen. Again, given the current climate, that is not likely, but it also is not impossible. So at the bottom line, at the end of the day, we need to make sure that we, the people, are engaged, informed, educated, and active in voting our conscience, voting our choice, and then following up beyond that to make sure that we are communicating with our elected officials to let them know that we voted to put you here. If you are not going to follow our wishes, we will, you know, vote you out at the end of your term. Now, that's easier with House of Representatives because the entire House serves a two-year sentence. It's not sentence. They have a two-year term. We're the ones that have a sentence, I guess. But, you know, they are reelected every 2 years. The Senate, on the other hand, they have a six-year term, so it is a little bit longer window. But that still does not remove the accountability step of holding them, by virtue of re-election, accountable for what they do while they are in office. You know, and you know, that is vitally important. You know, we've talked about, and I talk about on a regular basis, how, you know, in the 2016 election and the 2018, you know, midterm elections, you know, 46% of the American population didn't vote. And, you know, by age demographic, those numbers are even larger. You know, this is something that we have to correct. We have to make sure that we are getting everyone we possibly can out to the polls to vote and get that vote cast, you know, regardless of any impediments or, you know, marginalizations or disenfranchisement that may happen. Whatever you need to do to get out and vote, get out and vote. Because it is not only that your vote counts, but it is the numbers of you that vote that count. when voter turnout is high, when high percentages of voters turn out, politicians realize that there are more people who are engaged in the process, who are watching what is being done, and their actions will be governed accordingly. You know, we have seen this in the past. You know, it is called, and you hear politicians talk about this all the time, of having a mandate. And a mandate means that they are recognizing that the majority of voters that put them into office have a particular opinion on the issues, and that they, as elected officials, need to observe and follow those opinions in order to remain in office. You know, and that's the rule we've got to adopt. That's the change that we've got to bring into place as we engage to bring our elected officials in line with the wishes of the majority of Americans. Not just the wishes of the, you know, elite and the rich and wealthy in this country and the lobbyists and the big companies out there, but the reach of the American people. That is how our country needs to work in order to stay true to its design and to its laws and to the documents that were set out by our founders. Now, you know, so we look at what's transpiring with the Senate and the House, but there are also, because, you know, part of our political system is a state political system. You know, there's also the governor's races that are happening in 2020, and there are four Democratic governors who are up for re-election, and eight Republican governors who are also up for re-election. And just like, you know, our presidential and national legislative offices, these governors and their positions in each of the states are also critically important, particularly as this is a census year. And once the census is complete, the legislature and the governor are going to work together to draw out a district map for congressional representation in Washington for their state. So, you know, if the districts are gerrymandered toward one party or the other, and that's not something you approve of, part of the way you make that change is to vote for your state legislatures and vote for your governors to put people into those offices who, you know, believe as you do in the things that are important to you. So, you know, it is important that, you know, you get engaged with what's happening in your state. It's important that you are aware of the positions of your candidates for governor and your candidates for state senator and state representative, just as it's important to be aware of the positions of your mayor, your city council, your board of selectmen, school board, every other elected official. You need to be diving in, doing your diligence, and finding out where they stand on the issues that are important to you. And, you know, as I've said in prior episodes, you know, get engaged with their campaigns, ask the questions, go to the town hall meetings, ask your questions, go to the school board, go to your selectman board, go to your city council. You know, if the mayor is holding a town hall, go there and ask the questions and raise the issues that are important to you. Let them know that, you know, you are watching, that you are holding them accountable, and if they are not going to do what we elect them into office to do, we will show them the door. You know, that is how we get governance in this country to be representative of the people. All right, so it's important to understand. And the state elections have national implications in terms of important policy that happens in this country. The current administration has put out a $4.8 trillion budget that has substantial cuts in key social programs such as Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. It restricts and does all kinds of things to important programs, including healthcare, including education, transportation projects, infrastructure projects, you know, funding for things that the American people have said that they are not interested in having. But all of those and this budget has to be approved by Congress, by the House, and by the Senate. Because under the Constitution, the legislative branch controls the purse strings. They control the money that this country spends. The president can make recommendations and within certain limitations can do things by executive order, but in terms of the budget, in terms of the required spending and discretionary spending and all of that, that comes out of the legislative branch. So, you know, you can get the picture of exactly how important these down ballot races are to getting things done in this country. Is the president important to, you know, to the policies of the United States of America? Absolutely. Is the president in total control of the policies of the United States of America? No. The legislature sets policy. For example, the legislature is the body under the Constitution that is legally entitled to declare war. The president cannot declare a war. The president can take military action for a period of 90 days, but it then is required to go and get congressional approval. So, you know, be aware of how our government works. You know, we've talked about this in prior episodes about the powers of the executive branch, the legislative branch, and the judicial branch. We've talked about how important it is to be engaged at the local level, because many of the local actions feed national policy initiatives. For example, you know, the president appoints federal judges, but state judges, district attorney, you know, are all appointed at the state level. So, you know, if you are not happy with the processes of the criminal justice system in your state, your point of address to that is at your state level, as well as being at the federal level. So, you know, that is, you know, why it is so vitally important to get out and make sure that you are, you know, registered and all set and get out and vote throughout the year all the way up to the national election. So, you know, we'll pick this up a little bit in our call to action segment coming up. We're going to take another quick break right here. You're listening to Fire It Up. This is Steve. I'm your host right here on WJMSradio.com. We'll be right back after the break.
More than 270, more than enough to become the 44th president of the United States. He will be the first African-American president of the United States.
I've been broke all my life, but I kept hope all them nights. You see business in my city? Yeah, they closed all them twice. I was just riding down Salem, all them damn potholes I can't drive. I know y'all can fix it faster, but I know y'all won't try. Don't nobody care about us. And that's why I don't vote. Voted for Obama back in 2012. I remember that's when I had hope. He was saying, yes, we can. And everybody got less food stamps. And when I turned 21, I was still broke. I'd never vote again. I don't think I ever had a president make my life better. Did it all on my own. Ain't no politician ever do a nice gesture. I don't even know the mayor's name. I ain't never seen her one time ever. Tell me how she gonna help the city. What I'm supposed to do, write letters? What I'm supposed to do, blame Trump? He ain't never really gave a. Ain't nobody raised minimum wage. None of these jobs pay enough. I think they just want to keep us broke, cause they ain't putting none in place for us. This how all my people feel, but we gotta learn. We complained enough. Let me change it up. Everything I just said, everybody I know think the same way. See, they don't want to see us vote, and we never do, so we see the same thing. But all our votes really do count, and they'll never really let it show. So now I'm finna break it down, cause if I don't, you would probably never know. First thing first, you know back in middle school when they taught us it was three branches of the government. We forgot it when we got older. It's the judicial, the legislative, and executive. But all we know is the executive. That's the mayor or the governor and the president. Now none of them three people make no laws. They just be checking them. The laws come to their desk and all they do is say no or yes to it. So when the news station tried to tell us that Barack Obama couldn't put us on, we was all salty at Obama when it was the Congress members all along. We gotta focus on the legislative branch. Yeah, they the ones that make the laws. Yeah, they the ones write how much food stamp money you get on the card. But when people that wanted to help us wanted the job, I know they probably lost. Cause we ain't even know their name, we ain't know their face, we ain't know it all. So the Congress or the State House, that's legislative, they make laws. So what we want from the president is what they do, okay, y'all? See, they election every 2 years, but we don't ever even go to those. The Congress, they can raise minimum wage, but we ain't even really know it, though. So you know how back in 08, when we all voted for Obama, we was all supposed to go back in 2010 and vote for the Congress. Cause they the ones make child support laws. They the ones choose if your kids at school get to eat steak or corn dogs. The State House make the court costs. So if the country failed, then you can't say it's them, it's your fault. Cause y'all ain't know to vote for Congress members that was for y'all. And they don't gotta leave after 4 years, and we just let them sit. See, they don't wanna tell you this, they want you to focus on the president. Now the third branch is the judicial, that's judges. They the reason why John Crawford and Trayvon ain't had justice. So when Meek Mill got locked up just for popping willies, we blame the judge and not the city when they let her get voted in, cause they ain't know who to vote against. Imagine life on the other side. Roads better, schools better, everybody get their license back, grocery store food better, custody of your kids back, homeless people get new shelters. If we gon' fix the U.S., we gotta start with them two letters, me and you. Somebody told us that the government wanna keep us broke, but the only reason why those people in the government is cause we ain't vote. And I ain't talking about the president, I'm talking about the ones we ain't know. See, they was gon' try to keep it low, but it's gon' hurt them when they see the polls.
Every time you stay home, someone is making a decision about you, making decisions about the air you breathe, the water you drink, the food your kids eat, and how much money you bring home every 2 weeks. So every time you sit out an election, every time you don't show up because you think it doesn't matter, someone else is happy that you didn't show up so they can make that decision for you. Vote.
And we're back with the call to action segment, the final segment of our show each week, where I give you basically a homework assignment for you to do in order to help make sure that you are fully engaged and aware and are taking action steps on the things that are important to you. Really, really short and sweet this week is pay attention. That's our call to action. Pay attention. Pay attention to what the candidates on the Democratic side are saying, not only in the debates, but what they're saying in the interviews, what they're saying in the town halls and the one-on-one conversations. Pay attention to what is coming out of the White House. You know, look at the information that is being presented and ask questions. You know, dig in, find out what the facts are behind the tweets or behind the postings on Facebook or behind the news headlines coming out from the media. And go to other sources. You know, if you are a conservative media listener, okay. But also take some time and listen to the other side as well. Not trying to convince you to change, but there may be some facts or some information in there that you didn't hear in your main or your preferred source. And it can give you pause to think and look. And as I always say, dig deeper, dig wider, get educated, get informed. That means you've got to listen to all sides of the argument, because in fact, the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. You know, so yeah, as I said, pay attention, stay engaged, get involved with your local level politics, find out what your local candidates are about. You know, if you are a parent with school-age children, you should be very concerned about what your local school board is doing and what they're talking about and how they are shaping the education your children are receiving. If you have elderly parents that you take care of, you know, Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security should be high on your list. You know, elder care, access to medical services, all of these things that are governed out of the state and local level should be elements of your education in terms of where the candidates stand. You've got to take the effort to get out, get engaged, ask the questions, and get the answers you want. And if that politician or that candidate is not living up to what your expectations of him or her is, then you need to let them know that they will be shown the door in the next election cycle. You know, it is that critical that we are engaged in our political process from the local to the national. If you just decide to stay at home because you don't like any of the candidates that are out there and you're not going to vote to reelect the president. And so you're just going to, you know, basically say, F it, I'm not voting. You are turning control of your world, your environment at the local, the state, and the federal level over to other people. You know, they are running the show for you. You need to run the show for yourself. You need to be engaged. And, you know, I say this, not picking on them, but I say this for the younger generations. You know, you guys need to get out in high numbers and vote your conscience. You were underrepresented in the last elections. You've got to turn that around. You've got to be out there and get your opinions known, get your numbers counted, get your attention paid to by your elected officials, because it's your future. You're the ones that are going to inherit what change you create today. So, you know, be aware, be engaged, get informed, ask the questions, you know, get the answers you need in order to make an informed decision, and then get out there and vote, okay? And in the same vein, when that census card comes to you, don't just chuck it in the trash. Don't just disregard it. Don't leave it sitting on the kitchen table. Sit down, answer the questions, get it in, or go online or call or whatever you need to do to get your household counted into the U.S. Census. Funding for your local schools, hospitals, transportation, highways, railroads, infrastructure, all of that is tied to budget allocations that are governed by the numbers that come out of the census. So it is vitally important that we get that information filled out. It isn't a hunt. They aren't going to identify you by name. You know, it is merely how many residents in your household are there so that they can be counted. Get that census information in, get it in early, to make sure that it gets counted. It's vitally important. That being said, we're going to end our show today. I thank you for tuning in, as always. My name is Steve. I host the Fire It Up radio show here on WJMSradio.com. If you want to get in touch with the show, our email address is firedupradio@yahoo.com. I tweet out of Twitter at @RUFiredUp. That's A-R-E-U, Fired Up. And you can follow me on Facebook at facebook.com/FiredUpRadio. I always have information and statistics. There are links there to local elections coming up. There's all kind of information there, and I continue to add to it. I, again, thank you for tuning in. I look forward to getting a chance to speak with you again next week. Have a great week, and I will talk to you in 7 days.
Message, wherever you stand, I'm calling every woman, calling every man. We're the generation that can't afford to wait. The future started yesterday, and we're already